Hello, hello guys. This is Andrea Verri. I'm currently leading the GNOME sysadmin team. And this is Ray. Is currently another sysadmin. And we'll be telling you about how do we actually manage.
Thanks.
Okay, so we'll be telling you about how we manage our infrastructure, hardware side, software side, what will be the future plans of the infrastructure, and a lot of more stuff. So I leave the word to Sri for the first two slides.
Okay, so what do we do? So we are the GNOME sysadmin team. So we have a number of roles. We maintain the infrastructure. So that means number of web services, own cloud, things like that. Of course, we have Git, those kind of things. Our main job is to make sure everything is stable and, and running smoothly, right? So, and we also try to follow up with every single team and developer and contributor, right? In case they have a problem. So, if something goes down or we hear about something, right, our job is to try to fix it. We also coordinate with our hardware sponsors for anything related. You know, for instance, Red Hat. We work with Red Hat and so forth. I beg your pardon?
Canonical as well.
Yeah, our sponsors, I will tell that about in the next slide, but our hardware sponsors are currently Red Hat, Canonical, and the Oregon State University, the Open Source Lab. And so the Red Hat infrastructure has been really helpful with us many times, and I'm really thankful to them. And you can switch the... So, how do we communicate with each other, with each sysadmin? We do have a channel on the erc.gnome.org, which is sysadmin. We do have a public mailing list, and we also have a private one where we receive all the cron runs, all the puppet runs, domain renewals, and also we discuss anything private, like private matters. And we also set up a lot of new services for the GNOME users and developers to know exactly what's happening on our infrastructure. And these services are status.gnome.org, and we have a little demo here that Sri will show you. Okay, so we have a good bunch of services, and in the case something is wrong, you connect to this service, or you can even keep this page on your RSS feed, and you'll get each update when something goes wrong. So let's say that something's wrong with LDAP, that will show a red button saying that there is a problem and we are currently checking what's going on there. So keep this page bookmarked every time, and before asking us on the sysadmin channel, get yourself on this page and you'll know, you already know what's going on.
Can you kill something to show us something?
Yeah.
Do you really want us to do that? Do you really want us to have that power?
Then we created another mailing list. I'm sorry for that. But when I'm sending my announcement mails, I was sending them to desktop devil list, foundation list, foundation announce, So I created Infrastructure Announce, where I'll be sending all my emails about what's going on the infrastructure. And I also created a public Nagios view. If you connect to nagios.gnome.org with username anonymous and password anonymous, you'll see all the services we run and the status of them. So it's even better than the status.gnome.org one, because Nagios is a real-time service. So it sends checks to the machine. If the check goes wrong, it reports the failure immediately. So just, I don't have a preview of that, but you can check that on your machines now. Okay. So let's talk about the hardware. Red Hat is kindly hosting a lot of machines for us, a total of 22 machines, both virtual machine and physical machines at Phoenix, on the Phoenix 2 data center. Then Canonical is hosting two machines. One of them is hosting the GADA website and the GNOME website. And then the Oregon Open Source Lab is hosting our Nagios box and the testing machines for the website team that Andreas told you about on his talk. We do massively use libvirt and KVM, and we actually have just 8 physical machines, which are very huge in terms of RAM and CPU, and so we use a lot of virtual machines. And there is something special in how we name our servers. For example, the machine that currently hosts gnome.org is called Socket. Many other called Combobox or Clipboard or something like that. And the names are taken for the GTK widgets. So if you will do a reverse DNS check on our hosts, you'll find out some strange names. Don't worry, because it's actually expected. Okay, so let's go to the software. How we manage our web servers. We do have an Apache server in front of HA proxy. So we have two proxies, which acts as front ends. And all the backend machines actually are IP-less, so they don't have a public IP, and they are currently just accessible by the sysadmin team. And how does HA proxy works? There is a round robin DNS entry, so your client will randomly get an IP and connect to one of the two proxies, and this is called failover. So our proxies are set up in a failover mode, and we use an Apache in front of HA proxy because we redirect all the requests to SSL. So if you check all the GNOME services, all of them are hosted with SSL right now. Yeah, and the backend machine are obviously accessible only by the GNOME sysadmin. Yeah, so time for three.
Okay, so on the software side, we have a number of services. Or actually, more accurately, I'm going to describe what the environment looks like. So on most of our machines, everything is NFS mounted. So users generally have a consistent view if they log in. Well, not users, but systems administrators on the whole network. We have OpenVPN for machines hosted outside the Phoenix data center for accessing the private network. So You actually have to VPN to access the Phoenix data center. And that's just really for security purposes. We also have open LDAP for managing central access over the Git. This is primarily how we do accounts. I think it's not, I think most people know what that is. Finally, we have Bind for serving DNS. I don't think there's much to say about that. We have two named servers to cache DNS requests. And then finally, we have a GNOME Java server, which we'll talk further in the slides. The next stuff we have is Postfix and Spam Virus Killer. Generally, that's our mail server, and of course, we have some stuff to catch spam. We generally use WordPress as our web platform for both www.gnome.org and blogs.gnome.org. For our wiki software, we're using Moin. And let's see, and we also have our famous extensions at gnome.org, which is software called Sweet Tooth that was developed by Jasper. And then we have Etherpad, which is a nice note-taking application that lets you put text in there, edit it, whatever. We've been using it extensively, the marketing team especially has been using it extensively for taking notes during our meetings, like on IRC and so forth. And now at Quatic, yes.
Yeah. So how we manage our servers? We heavily use Puppet. We do have an internal Puppet repository managed with Git. And each commit we do is then notified to all the sysadmin team. So I actually know who is working on what. And all the team is aware that they shouldn't touch a specific model, because I'm doing some changes there. I'm not sure how many of you do actually know how Puppet work. No one? So Puppet is a centralized management system. So you keep your configuration files in one place, and that one place is called Puppet Master. You then synchronize, you create models, and you synchronize your machines to a specific model. So you are able to recreate an entire machine with just two clicks and by running a specific command. So it's really, really handy to rebuild an entire virtual machine in the case, for example, you're upgrading from RHEL 5 to RHEL 6. We also keep standard operating procedures on our wiki, because each software we manage is configured, is heavily customized. So not all the sysadmins are aware about how we did customize the wiki or Bugzilla or LDAP. So the SOAP is there for this specific motivation. You check the SOAP and you have all the instructions you need to find out how you should properly manage a specific service that was set up by someone else. So we come to the backups. We don't have a Bakula machine, and we manage our backups in a strange way. I mean, we run a nightly rsync run that sends all the data of all the servers to a North Carolina, to a North Carolina facility, and from there we get all the backups on tape drives. And Owen wrote a little script for that currently has an exclude list. That means that we can exclude specific directories from the tree of the of a specific file system and exclude cache files, for example, or files or bin mounts. So so we don't duplicate the data on the backup. All the logs of EarthSync are then sent to a machine where, and that machine generates a report every day. So we get a mail which tells something like, yeah, all the machines are fine, all the backups went fine, or something's wrong with the with a specific machine, so you should check what's going on. And this is called daily report, and you should thank, we should thank Owen for writing this very nice Python script. So how do we do our monitoring? We are heavily using Nagios. We're using Nagios with a lot of customization, and the main one is called CheckMK. CheckMK is an additional software you can actually link to Nagios, and you get around 10 or more checks without doing anything else special. It does that for, it just works out of the box. You just have to link it on your Nagios interface and configure a few things. We also have event handlers are a really nice feature, because sometimes Apache can go down and for whatever reason, or it just gets a timeout. Event handlers are there for that. And how does they work? In fact, they send a check to a specific service, and if the check is critical, it automatically restarts the HTTPD daemon. So they are very, very handy. And then we have PNP for Nagios, which is similar to, I don't know, to CollectD or, yeah, to CollectD. It creates per host and service statistics over the time, so we know how much the machine's load is or how much RAM is being used during the time. So the future plans, which I'm sure many of you are interested in, and many of you are complaining about Bugzilla, because our Bugzilla instance is very, very old. It's version 3.4, while the new release is 4.4. But why the upgrade didn't come yet? GNOME has many extensions. We customized our Bugzilla instance with many extensions that were written by Olaf Vitters, Bikor. I don't know if some of you know him. And unfortunately, it's not contributing anymore. And while talking with William the other day, he offered himself to help me rewriting these extensions to the new Bugzilla format, so we can probably plan an upgrade of our Bugzilla during the next 6 months, I guess. It will probably take down, we will probably have to take down the service for around 2 days, I guess, because the database usage is around 20 gigabytes. And restoring the world dump will take around 36 to 48 hours, I guess. The next future plans is relocating our machines at Phoenix 2. Currently, our network switch, the network switch we are currently using, is the one of another rack. And that's definitely something we have to fix. And we are collaborating with the Fedora guys at Phoenix 2 to have all the management consoles attached to the to each of the machines, so we can track down all the errors of the console of the physical machines. Yeah. How does it work? In fact, each machine has a management console part. You connect this part to the network switch, you get an IP, a username, and a password. Then you get yourself into the VPN, and you can access the web interface that allows you to reboot the machine, check the console, shut down the machine, and so on. And get all the details about the manufacturer, for example. So we get all the details about the physical machine itself. We also plan to remove shells from master, because currently there are a lot of active accounts, and all of them do have SSH access to master, and I feel this is not very good security speaking. So we'll be removing access to master, and we'll be creating a script to do that through your local machine. And we are thinking about creating a little web interface where you can authenticate using your LDAP password, and you can just then click on upload file. You select your toolbar, from your PC, and you click on install. This will call the FTP admin script from the machine and do the job for you. So we'll finally get rid of the shells. And I'm really proud of the last item here, and thanks to Alberto Ruiz, who did all the work. And we'll be mirroring the whole git.gnome.org to GitHub. And this will happen through an hook, a post-receive hook. So when you commit to the repository, it will run a little mirror that will sync all the content of your module directly to GitHub. But we'll be announcing this in a better way with more details in the near future, I guess, with all the instructions you may need.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a mirror.
Okay.
It's
for people to
be able to branch on their GitHub account without having to download everything, upload everything like themselves.
All right.
And the one advantage is that we can track the activity around the particular project with just one click, and we can see who's forking and what they're doing against master.
Oh, okay.
Right? So yeah.
Yeah, I was just curious. I'm certain you'll give more details later. Cool.
Yeah, also given the fact that KDE had pretty bad this corruption, I don't know, a few months ago, and they didn't have the backups. So we are also mirroring to make sure that we have two backups, one sent to the external facility every night, and one on GitHub. Yeah, we need to thank the GitHub people, because they've been really helpful with us and helped Alberto setting this up. So, Sri?
Okay, so this part is really the fun part. This is the part where we get to tell you what you can use and to help collaboration. The first one is Meetbot, which is it lets you do meetings on IRC. And one of the nice it's a software that most people don't know about, which is why I'm discussing it here. Meetbot lets you, once you want to start, you just say, like, you tell Meetbot that you're going to start the meeting, and then you're able to have all your discussions logged. You can actually have somebody as a leader, so forth. It's really quite cool. And once you're done, you can just kind of end the meeting, and then you automatically get logs published on the website. Now, we've had some complaints about this because a lot of people want the logs to be private. And so that's one bit of feedback we've gotten. And we're going to look at how to do Meetbot on a per-channel basis. And so if we can reconfigure, like, say, if you start a meeting on, like, Pound GNOME, right, you can expect that's going to be public. Whereas if you started one in marketing or, you know, some other channel, then those would be private. So that's one thing there. The slide has a link to the documentation. So I really encourage you to look through that, use it, and give us some feedback, because I think it will really help us out when trying to do collaboration. The next one is Etherpad. I talked about this before. We use this a lot, and especially on the marketing team, we do this constantly. Even at Quadec, as Emily said, we were doing summaries of each day, and we've been using this. Basically, you can have 3-4 people editing this page, and you can have chat, and you'll also know who's typing what because it'll have different colors. If we want, we can always try to do a demo real quick. We've had some feedback on this as well. One of the things that happened on this is that you only get one Etherpad, and if you ever used Etherpad before, a lot of people would like to use multiple, because when you go to it, you only get this one page, and if somebody's already using it, then you don't really know what to do, and so people end up going to PiratePad or something else. So we're going to be looking at trying to create new ones on the fly. So we didn't do it before because we were worried about spam, but we're going to try to do an experiment, see if it works. And if we don't get spam, great. If we do get spam, then we'll figure out what to do at that point. And we had a whole session on this. OwnCloud. If you didn't go to that talk, this is really cool, because this allows you to do document storage, right? So with document storage, you can drag and drop whatever, like OpenOffice or any number of things. Sometimes if you have graphics design, things like that, it's a nice place to put it without having to use Google Docs or some other proprietary stuff. So the other cool thing is you can share it. If you click on it and say share, you can share with everyone. You could create a public URL just like you can with Dropbox, and it works fairly well. So that's another nice thing. If you want to use it, create a bug, and we'll be happy to give you access. The marketing team hasn't been using it all that much as they could have. I'd like to encourage them to use it more. So are you? Okay.
Whenever I need to post some screenshots of something, like work in progress, mock-up of, say, a website or whatever, or just like a simple, stupid, disposable thing, right? which there are some services for, but they are like kind of how they are, right? So what I used to do is to run this in a temporary folder on my own server, but I'm very happy that this thing exists because it also allows me to very quickly, easily sharing public files mm-hmm. with others, and just, this is what it looks like, right? So yeah. Thank you for setting that up.
Yeah, and the great thing, of course, is we're already working on integration with GNOME, right, with GNOME Online online services, online accounts, sorry. For some reason, I couldn't remember. But we're already doing a lot of dogfooding. Like, it's going to show up in GNOME documents and so forth. So, yeah.
So, yeah, I was just wondering, when is it just going to be for foundation members or for like the wide?
Oh, it's going to be for foundation members only. Yeah. So this is sort of a something that you get for as a
huh?
That's not bad.
Yeah, as a benefit. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. We should definitely do that.
I do understand that it probably asks too much from the infrastructure just to make it available to everybody. But of course, it looks quite.
Yeah, I mean, it's a service. We expect you that you're going to use it for GNOME related activities, as opposed to if it was wide, then we would end up becoming a service provider, right? If it becomes too popular, we might have to do something else, because all that stuff takes space, and you never know. The other way is to maybe have a monthly payment. Yes?
If it costs a profit, or we can attach it to whoever contributes to the friends of GNOME.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, that would be a good goal too.
Okay, we don't
have it for the money, okay, I understand. No, the main concern I have is about privacy, because opening our instance to the world, we should provide some legal documents saying our legal policy is this. So yeah.
I mean, with VPN, it's like partner with someone who is a lot of these errors.
Okay. So, I would like to take a few minutes to remember a friend, a great friend. I worked with Seth for months. Oh, I can tell 2 years. Actually, on the Fedora infrastructure, and it was an amazing person. He always helped me in many ways. He was very busy hacking on many projects, but every time I had a question, either a Python question or a sysadmin question, he was always available to help. And I will never, never, never forget him. And I think I wanted to create this slide so we can remember him all together here. Okay. That should be all for me, if you have any question.
Yeah, it's just one other thing is I if you have services that you do want, we can even discuss it here. It would be nice. I know one person wanted LXR for code searching, so that's one avenue there. Do you guys have other things that you think would be beneficial? Good. Building Windows and Mac binaries. On what exactly? installers, or I guess I don't know. I what? I didn't hear you. Can you use the
can you use that other mic?
I was thinking about module maintainers.
And there's been some discussion about doing builds for Windows binaries on the unbuild.gnome.org. So we have a machine that's set up to do builds we use for ostree.gnome.org. And so, I mean, I think it's mostly a question of having somebody to maintain the build scripts. I mean, that's for doing a cross-build. I mean, I think we want to do native builds and have Windows VMs, and that's a trickier issue, something we'd have to work a little bit harder to figure out how to do properly. But certainly doing cross builds with like MinGW is certainly very feasible. It's just a really question. For Mac, Mac is sort of difficult. I think we'd have to figure out some way of getting Macs into our infrastructure. I think that it's, I mean, you know, it's feasible, it's anything is feasible, but it's a little bit more, I think, tricky. So I'm not sure it's gonna happen anytime soon, honestly.
Yeah, Alberto. Well, I'm sorry? What's that exactly?
You don't know Guitarius.
Oh, Guitarius. Oh, Guitarius. I'm sorry. I didn't. Not that I.
People may be wondering, well, if we're doing a GitHub clone, a GitHub mirror, why would
we? Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying.
The reason is that we could start using pull requests. Because we don't want to do pull requests and integrate that with Buxilla, right? Because we don't want to do that with a closed source service that is maintained by someone else, but we like internally it'll be really useful for contributions.
Yeah, definitely. If you put in a bug ticket, we'll take a look at it.
So there has been this bug file, I think, back in 2009 for automatic commits in DemLies that could allow translators to submit a translation file via standard web form and will commit the file after QA on that is done.
The main problem I see in setting up a Guitarius is, first, it's really hard to set up, really. And many sysadmins told me that it's been a nightmare. Also, are we going away from our current, we do review patches in Bugzilla, and we'll be spending efforts in upgrading Bugzilla. Does it make sense to you setting up another instance, which is Guitarius? I mean, apart the pull requests.
So if it's not GitHub, there are other projects. I don't remember the name of the other one, but GitLab, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how hard it is to deploy, but people seem really happy with it.
Well, the problem is that GitLab and Guitarius introduce a complete different way of managing HELs.
Right.
And
well, if it's not feasible, then we don't do it.
Yeah. We manage everything through LDAP. And all the scripts we use are written to talk to our tools, to our LDAP instance.
Right.
So that would mean rewriting all the scripts for another service like GitLab, which is a completely different HL system.
Right.
So it's not something that can we do.
If it's not trivial, then we better use our resources for something else, I guess. But
yeah.
With regards to the other question, from my experience, reviewing pull requests is a lot easier than with regards to the UI that you presented in something like GitHub or Guitarius. It's I guess that the workflow is a lot more
is nicer. Yeah, you can also, I mean, we already, with the GitHub Mirror, we'll be able to do like the comparing like the master branch with the feature branch. But of course, we're relying on a closed source service. So it's like I don't think it's nice to have the mirror, but I don't think that we want to ask people to use a closed source service if we want to do things nicely. So I don't know, but maybe what we could do is figure out a way to just present the diff without setting up the whole infrastructure.
Yeah, there was also a proposal to set up review board. But again, should we set up review board, which is another review tool, yeah, and then we have Splinter, which is usually used by Bugzilla and other GNOME developers. So the workflow will get harder. I mean, you send your patch on review board, then you say, yeah, I sent a patch there. And
well, you say that, but the thing is that right now, if you're working on a branch, it's already, you're missing one step there. I have to generate the patches.
Yeah.
And I know Owen has done some integration with Ingrid and Bugzilla, but still, it'll be about saving one step, not adding another one.
Yeah. At the moment, our Bugzilla instance is completely separated from Git.
Right.
There is no interaction between it. So you have to manually create the patch, submit it to Bugzilla, and that's all. It would be nice to have an integration system between Bugzilla and our Git.
Mm.
But that's also a bit harder because we use Chgit, which is a software written in C that does our web interface, creates diffs on the go, and something like that.
Well, it doesn't have to live in Chgit, right? If we wrote, if someone wrote the Bugzilla extension to do that, maybe
we can create an extension for Bugzilla.
Be able to propose this branch.
Yep.
I'm not suggesting that you do it, but maybe we can ask if someone is up to do it.
Yeah.
So that'd be really nice.
Yeah.
And sorry.
We need more manpower when it comes to developing new tools right now.
Yeah. I just suggestion to the AVD in the afternoon. Yeah. For a conference organizer, it is nice to have an open source event manager to centralize, to have an environment to schedule the program and the conference and even the travel support program.
Yeah, this is more a question for Fabiana and Andreas and Tobias as well. Yep.
Paper review, paper submission, and all the emails that are triggered during the process. So that's her project. If you guys have any suggestions, any ideas for this, you should look for this girl. Okay.
Yeah, so.
I also say, though, I think you guys should really talk, because I'm sure you have specific requests, things you need for GNOME Asia, right? So.
Yeah, feedback from GNOME Asia is definitely welcome.
Yes, so she's currently building our management system for conferences. So it's just a matter of time. Yeah.
Yeah, if they want anything from the web team, they're right here
Yeah. Any more questions?
It's not a question. I just really wanted to thank you guys. You've been doing a really awesome job. Especially for the web team, it has been really helpful. And I'm pretty sure all the other teams has the same to say. So thank you very much.
Thanks.